This is a production of Cornell University.
Everyone, to the March 9th meeting of the Graduate Professional Student Assembly. We will begin with, as always, a roll call of the voting members. For physical sciences, Jeffrey. And then Catherine and I are both here. Humanities, Jesse. Christy. Christine. Oh, okay. For social sciences, William. Todd. Lynn. For the professional schools, it seems to be a favorite, but Julian, Alexander, Kara. For biological sciences, Cora, Anne, Ian, and Paige is here. And finally, for masters, Ashley, and Haynes. Right. So, next will be approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes? I realize these were distributed a little bit late this week. Alright. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Alright. Is there a second? I ask for unanimous consent to approve the minutes. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. And with that, we'll move into our GPCI update. First, we'll have Jana LeMay.
Hi.
Okay.
For you, those of you that don't know me, I do two things at the graduate school. One is that we interview students for any experience or questions that they may have about the academic program or about team life or their lawyer or whatever's going on. So we tend to answer questions like that. And the second thing that I do is do a lot of program analysis. So it's very important to work within my program portfolio. So anyway, thank you today for my academic services and showing what we've done. The first thing we did, I'd just like to give a little bit of background. We formed the GPCI back in the 80s, and at that time, we never considered advisory committee what we were looking for. We've never just been stayed on. We meet monthly, and we have a really robust cross-campus partnership to talk about the learning services for students. So I won't read you all those, but you'll get a good sense of the red bar, our human resources, career life services, which is working on the partnership that we have, IEO, we have Adequate Community Center and residential programs, and then we also have four students that have been affiliated with this program. Nikki Lee, I just want to point her out, only that she did a lot of programs in the beginning for us, so we have something to go on. So I think one of the first questions that we want to talk about in the entire committee is who actually are our community members? What is the population they exist? So what we did is we looked at some data that we had collectively as a group to try to figure out who are our students, and then the second question is how are we going to connect to those community families, and how does that relationship come to be? So first of all, you know that we have about 25 to 35 for the graduate school, our survey data that we have, 25 to 35 of our graduate students have actually on campus of Alpha Partners, and then between 7.7 and 8.6 have a child or children. And with that, I think it's important to know of the 5,200 graduate students I'm talking about, that's about 400 children that we have floating around. That means for 400 students that have a child or children that are floating around. And then in addition, we have family partners about 14 to 18 is what we're expecting for estimating. Seniors, this is the international students and spouses. So when seniors are in place, there's actually a visa process that we can pass for 6,000 or children that are passed the visa. And so with that, we have 168 international students, and then also about 80 of them have children. So these are the media who add these up, we're trying to get into the inventory who are our families. On the SHIP program, as you know, there's a dependent care for Finally, we have a consensus of special schools. We have a special school that are going to love. They know the students, they know our name, they know the number that we have, and they include that up here. And then we continue to review this information. So one of the things that we'll be looking at in the future is actually community members. We know that there's a lot of families that listen to what is the nature of that. So there's some of these that this is about communication with families. This is a big deal for how we tackle. So you'll see, I'm jumping down this very bottom here, but we use it for every school announcing to do some communication with the students to contact themselves and partners, families, what they think. But we do have to specify things that you'll make sure. What is the graduate school? We have three lectures. What is the graduate students with kids? There's 45 members of that. Does that really love that kind of budget you use for it? Is something that you're working on? We also have student partners, there's 200 there. And probably most interesting in most communities is dual career. So we do have students out of the department looking for a job, gather listeners, and what we do is communicate from job to career to some of the other educational activities that are happening to help support our partners getting jobs. Career Life Services, this is through our HR. They have listeners that tell the families, especially those with children, what's going on in the local area. And so in that, there's teams of kids, there's 300 there. Parents, and that's just the general, whatever program for children is about 900. And then there's also a lactation group that does some support for each other and talk about issues around that, and that's about 200. I'll just point out that health services, some of you might know already, when you do your mandatory health information form, when you enroll, you tend to disclose if you're bringing your child or not, and in doing so, what happens is you have to send you some information about the resources. We're trying to see if we can get that data to communicate directly with our students and with our families, but that is something that we're working on. And then, like I said, we have the graduate school announcements, and we hope that the information is giving us some guidance by using the membership on the screen so they have a project. So I went back through the objectives of the original BCCI document in family services to showcase just a couple things that we're doing that help support the objectives. The first one was students should have access to information about resources for students with families. And so we're hoping that our work group and the membership that we have, that each of us will touch on a few families' lives, maybe a little differently, but as a collective whole, we hope that we're getting everybody on the membership of the students we have by the state. So our current project, which I want to make sure that you know, and I hope that showcase that this is maybe not, but I want to explain that, is we're having a new university website. Some of you may know that there is already a website presence for the graduate school and also dean of students for students with families. We're combining those, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to be more specific as far as if you are a family child, here's what we do, we're doing the time. So the membership is working on that right now. I think it's going to be a great mutual resource for these families so they know where to go and what kind of questions to ask. On the sub level, so we're going to have an expected parents page, parents and children, spouses and partners, policies of faculty and staff, we provide information to that population as well, and then also resource directories. So not only what's available for now, but outside of the community. But by the end of this brief session, we should be able to do that. I'll just point out that we were able to share funds to be able to do this. So the graduate school and the vice president of student academic services has increased a lot of contributions to funds to be able to support us in doing this website development. The second objective was to foster and support a campus climate for graduate professional students and families. So this is this first edition is called Time Out Program. This is a program for our students called All Experience. People come together to talk about issues that pertain to being here and then juggling with them being a scholar as well. And so our first edition was done in the fall semester. And we had that activity up and did a lot of great things. So much so that we expanded it for the spring semester. We hope that this evening session already has 27 signed up tomorrow to attend tomorrow's session. So we're hoping that this will help to provide a more supportive place and environment for those students who are also here. Number three, Guardian Preference Leadership had access to affordable child care options. So part of the membership of the Student Family Advisory Committee is the Cornell Women's Research Hall. And that is where the child care grant is currently housed. And so she is, Laura Weiss is the director of that program, so she's just on the committee. Right now, that's one of the things that we're looking at as far as housing structure, you know, primary resources, how to support, and then the students who pretend to have child care services. And so we've done some things in this last round that hopefully expanded our pool of eligible students that could access the money, but we're hoping to talk about that more systematically in this next couple months. And then, like I said, already, we're currently trying to consider how do we use the Cornell Child Care Resource Center or Child Care Center to be a resource for students who are parents. Can we use it a little differently? So some ideas that can we say, hey, there's a study child, or if you want to come in and use the center when you're a child, and you can do the work at that time. So we're trying to figure out other ways to use the child to play that way, and the professional way to take care of children to help support our students who are parents as well. The four is provide support for an inclusion of student partners and spouses. So this over here is a flyer that we created last year, the advisory committee. And the idea was to have a welcome, trying to get our student spouses and families connected to great people now in the VA. And so we took this everywhere that we went. There's a couple of events I know it's too small, but I do want to point out that the ISSO orientation program does include a separate session for student spouses and partners that we were a part of. We had spouses and partners and that's for student partners and spouses and partners. Get together to talk about their concerns, the transitions, and their kinds of issues. And then we also had, unfortunately, the task force dedication and effort. We had the task force family welcome event. So that's a more of a social atmosphere where everybody knows kids are spacing and an opportunity to find out about local agencies and some local resources as well. And so we piggyback on that to make sure that all students do that, not just task force community centers on the families. And then we also piloted for the first time graduate school welcome for students and spouses. And also, we had an ice cream social followed by watching the graduate student stories video that we have on the hopeful to be female. But we showed that to our staff and spouses and partners with the idea that, hey, look, this is what your spouse and partners are going through. So understand that these are the challenges that you have, all kinds of questions. So it was really nice that we were after the session to actually welcome and have a great support. And then, like I said, afterwards, we had an ice cream social. I think we had about 110 people come through in a 3-hour period for that. But the idea was really just to welcome the family. So that's a couple things that we did last year to help include the spouses and partners. And I know that this is the last topic right here. So we're trying to help support our student spouses that want to do something while they're here. Okay. So one thing that we've done is we've secured a relationship with what's called Content Workforce. It's downtown in Ithaca. And what they do is they have their resources and abilities to meet individually with spouses and partners on everything from cover letter, resume writing, to understanding the local job market here in Ithaca and trying to figure out how to best help our student spouses and partners. So what we actually do is we have a session where we bring them in to talk to our spouses and partners. This is the fourth session that we've done right now. We did it at the beginning of each semester. We get great feedback, and I have a little more folks tell us about 75% of the spouse partners will end up working with them one on one to make sure that they can find a job and find training. The other thing that we did, this is a new session, for students that don't have work authorization, what can we do? And so we worked with the Cornell Public Service Center to try to figure out will they be willing to work with our student spouses and partners. Yes, they will. And so we showed that they were willing to do a session about how to volunteer. And so how to volunteer is either on campus or to get involved in the local area. And so those were things we had about 25 to 10 are just the first session, just last week. And so the bad thing, the other session is that there tends to be an expectation of some spouses and partners that, hey, I would love for Cornell volunteer. So we thought that it would make most sense to do a session about how to get a job at Cornell. And basically, it's an HR recruiter from our human resources. They get together with spouses and partners and just talk about, what an expanded job position is and how to go about filing your application, what kind of keywords you should be looking for, who you should be asking questions of if you don't know about the job. So it's more specific to Cornell, but considering that Ithaca really it is a partner's employer of folks in Ithaca, we think that that's a good thing to do. So even if that's we get about 20 or 30 folks each semester, we're quite pleased with that as far as developing relationships to help support ourselves in these questions. There's a few corrections. So in spring 2015, we meet on the website, and so we have one thing to figure out, and that is completion of the university website. Once we get that out, we'll be pretty good shape. At least all the information will be there. I'll be happy to share that with you once I get that together. And then what we tend to do is sort of step back, because we've been trying to do a lot of programming and trying to figure out what the needs are, and what we want to do is to make sure we have some time to really discuss some of the issues that are relevant to our student families. And so what we're doing is we need to learn a little bit more about some of the federal requirements. So there's quite a lot of there's some obligations for universities as far as how we support our student parents and our accepting students. And so we're spending some time to learn about what kind of our needs for that population, what we can or should be doing differently or better. And we're also learning about health insurance options. So as you know, we have an open exchange market now for health insurance, so is there any benefit to having that as part of a package or something that we can offer to our students, spouses, and partners, and also their children? So we're having Joy Moore speaker come in and talk to us to figure out what we should be advertising or what we should be perhaps more inviting to students. The other thing, like I said earlier, the child care grant subsidy program, so we're reviewing that, trying to figure out what we should be doing with those, like, the primary resources. And then, up here, we spent a lot of time talking about how to create an inclusive environment for our student partners, or students who are parents in particular. And what that means is, you know, is there any sensitivity training that we should be doing for student parents as far as how they juggle their responsibility to vote? And should we, do some more training, or where can we get into places that already exist that already talk about diversity, realizing that student parents do have a diverse kind of experience here at Cornell. So that's taking up a lot of time. We're not really sure where to go with that, but it's something that we're interested in. And then finally, I'm very excited that we can create a campus club for our student partners. And like I said earlier, there's about at least 1,000, maybe 1,200 of our students do have a partner for spouse. The Johnson School has what's called the Joint Ventures Program, which is made up of students, spouses, and partners as a support group. And so we'd like to create that for our graduate student population as well, or anybody that would be our student, spouse, and partner can join. We can do this with our student assembly that allows for the creation of an organization. I don't know about the funding yet, so we've got to work it out. But I do have three student partners that are willing to take the time to help create an organization, which hopefully will get some legacy and standing as far as what they can do programmatically to help support one another. So I'm hoping to get that going for the semester as well. So I don't need additional support for this, so I'm not going to come to the team if they have no funding. I'll be going to do it for the And then I think that was it. So I hope you can overview for the student families, the work group is working on. Do you have any questions or thoughts or concerns?
The programs that are offered at the
different
ones, like the public
learning
initiative, are you involved in
any of those? Natalie personally took Cornell involved in that, and so she's a member of our committee, and so we've got a lot of. So I did mention there's a lot of cross-pollinating and talking to one another about what programs we have going on. And she's made it clear that it's open to all students and families. So hopefully more folks are hearing about it because the different venues that work with students and families are hearing about it as well.
Does those events get advertised through any of your listeners?
They do on some, yeah. They do through the HR office. We'll do some through ours. But the problem with students and families we're finding is, you know, we're starting to figure out how to identify them, which is good. But the next piece is how do you communicate directly to the spouse and partner? And that we have limited access to those right now. So it's something that we're hoping can develop as, you know, we move forward. But I think the information is getting out there. The university website, the idea is to have a news channel where it showcases. So I think more of the activities of the Cornell, what Cornell is doing to support families will be posted down there.
So you were saying that they were going to
I got two websites on there, and so the website is a graduate school site, something that I put together when I first started, and it was basically a summary of what Cornell resources are available to support students and families. So I break it out, expecting with children or partners and spouses. So it's pretty repetitive to what this new place is going, but this new one is going to be really nice to start. If you are something, if you are something, so you know, those kind of things, because they'll be written a lot differently. So they should go get that, okay? And then the other site is the USU site. So they have a YouTube children's site is what theirs is. This is pretty nice because we've got a lot of resources that are out in the area. One of the kind of things that we're having is always promoting all area kind of resources and tons of information. And so how they look through that, determine whether or not we want to access the data website, and then update that. So this is kind of tough questions that we're answering right now. But there are two resources that are coming to look for all the different ones, especially the ones that you want to do better.
So one or two more questions.
They're not a part of the child care grant
Let's thank Jenna and okay. So Jen Allen will be postponing her update on the student center until April because there is currently a survey underway and they want to have feedback from that survey so that the update can be as complete as possible. So with that then, we will move on to reports of officers and committee updates. For the executive committee, I don't have any. Okay. Operations and staffing. Appropriations. Right. Communication? Finance Commission. Advocacy.
We have a date for that discussion, so it's the Monday, April 27th, from 6 to 8 to Big Red Barn, and we're going to have about 50 participants to show, we hope we will, locations and advertising that we're going to do. The committee is looking for volunteers to help with the discussion, so if you'd like to be a part of the event,
back to yours.
The comments period is happening right now. I sent everyone an email 2 weeks ago to forward to your department. I'm going to send you yet another email to forward to your department because, well, first of all, it's a reminder, but also because the contact information on the old email turned out to be incorrect due to circumstances with the owner.
For Diversity International students, Catherine is unable to be here today, but she told me that there were no updates. Program report?
For
Question. So, April 25th would be Charter Day weekend. It was conflict with events on Saturday evening. So, would it be possible to move that week after, or? And then, so for the Sustainability Committee, we met again last week, I think, and we have decided that we are going to be sponsoring pizza at the Big Red Barn sometime in April. We're part of a getting the word out about Green Labs and Green Office initiatives, and we're also looking to schedule a summer training session to teach students how to be sort of green representatives for their own individual labs or office spaces. So stay tuned for more information on that. And with that, we'll move into new business with Resolution 7. I think you want to give a resolution.
So I guess I can give a brief overview about what this resolution is about. Sorry, we sent it out county, but I can give a summary here. Basically, the idea is based on what we have observed and what happened, we try to propose a better solution to get information out not only to the executive board, but also to other executive board members or like the larger community of graduate students. So our proposed plan is we're encouraging the university to have consider like a policy of public notice or like a public open public comment period so that people can talk about policy, what's good and what's bad about it. That's one of the biggest points. The second one is we are proposing another procedure in terms of when there are new policy coming out. So we're suggesting that we will hold an executive session. What an executive session is that it will include all the voting members and not the committee that's for now, but we may amend the bylaw of the charter later, who respect that. So we will have an executive session which is closed to only voting members at the current moment, and representatives from the graduate school will come and talk about the policy they're considering, and there will be a discussion, and at the end we will try to draft a formal memorandum which considers the majority will and also the dissenting will of what was discussed. And it will be drafted probably by people designated from the GMA. And then once the policy becomes public, the formal memorandum will be released as well. And last but not least, if the graduate thinks that it's not possible to discuss the policy before it's carried out, they should provide a reasonable explanation to the GDSA executive board. And also the GDSA will try to, when consulted, the executive board will try to draft a formal memorandum as well. And once the policy is out there, we will release that formal memorandum in that case. And that's the brief overview about what
okay. So, I guess to start, are there any questions on?
So, my question is first, the executive session is, I don't think it says in here that it's closed to the voting members. Is that the executive session like official terms and the bylaws?
Yes.
My other question slash concern is, so, on line 47, we say, having to provide for the chair of government, sort of talking about kind of like not having like open discussion in the afternoon on why the chair of government is. We don't really say what we feel chair of government is. I'm not sure if that's maybe the thing that we should do. I don't know if maybe we should clarify what we say or not. They have to. We definitely gave them input on that. They chose to ignore that input.
To answer that, I will say that in the resolution it is stated that I'm not sure if I'll be able to find it, but essentially the idea is that because it's only currently, the discussion currently only happens with a few select graduate student leaders, the executive board, trustees, and it violates the shared governance from our perspective because we're not allowed to speak a wider opinion, and so it is limited to the opinion of about 5 individuals. And that doesn't necessarily reflect the views of graduate students at large, especially because if currently the executive board is comprised of PhD students, and professional students have a very different opinion on a lot of issues that might come up, as an example. So we believe that keeping it closed to such a small group of people is what is problematic about this.
Right. I mean,
Jesse will write down an amendment for that word itself, and then we will discuss that. Are there any other comments, questions? There are some discussions which, for reasons beyond the control of the administration, say if there's data that's shared with them by peers, which they will share the explicit condition of it not being distributed broadly, or things like that. So there are certain discussions which need to be kept more confidential than others. And so I think it's important that we not say this is all or nothing. Either we consult the full executive session or no one. So in this way, we allow it. Basically, it allows them to talk to us without fear that we're going to demand an executive session. It allows us to have a bit more dialogue there. So we have left some of the timeline purposely vague. The reason behind that is that different decisions come to a conclusion at different paces. So, try to think of what to say. Essentially, if we want the discussion to happen with enough time for any new policy to be changed before the decision is formally announced, but it is said in here that, you know, these in line 88, these executive session discussions occur with enough time for them to make a change to the policy before it's implemented. But what that means is very hard to define. And if we define it, I'm concerned if we define that timeline too rigidly, it'll be more difficult to have these discussions in a way that actually means they can change something. There's other times when, you know, when a decision's being formulated for the first time, not all the facts have been considered, the fact finding hasn't been done. At that point, it wouldn't make sense for us to be consulted over it, because it just slowed down the process. At the other end of the spectrum, the time is too late to make any changes to the policy, things have already started to happen. So it's kind of hard to define where in that spectrum we want this discussion to happen, which is why we've left it a bit more vague. And to say about calling executive sessions, we have liaisons, or positions for liaisons, and committees throughout the university. We have a student elected trustee, we meet with the dean, the executive board meets with the dean on a monthly basis, so we have eyes and ears out there to listen to these special policies as they're being discussed. It will be partially on us and partially administration to ensure that these discussions happen in an appropriate, timely manner, but it will fall to an extent to us to be vigilant, and we do have the mechanisms in place to have students to hear these discussions as they're being formulated.
I know that some of these are original texts, but I have one suggestion that we've actually been pulling in the direction from the GSA Charter about what the role of shared governance plays for the GSA services. And there's a couple of lines that I guess I can speak about. But the second paragraph for our charter says that services and governance professionals use assembly to ensure direct focus so they can be involved in addressing professional
the thing is that the
that we are very
Okay, so to move things like this, Jesse, do you want to propose your specific amendment? Of the charter. 2.03. So, first quote, section 2.03c. And let me just get the wording on here. What was the other section? So, in the interest of time, we can defer the vote on this to our next regularly scheduled meeting, and that way we can sort of formulate this. And I would rather we have time to actually sort of review ourselves together and have time to edit it, figure out exactly what we want to say with it. So I would ask for a motion to defer the vote on this until our next meeting, at which point we will present this to our clause of the amendment. Unless we feel we can. Just because it seems like this, we might start to contradict other parts of the resolution if we only ask for Okay, so we'll defer the vote on the resolution until our next meeting. Is there a second? Okay. So I guess I'll ask that we vote by placards to defer vote on this. We'll continue discussing this. We have about 7 more minutes allocated for this. So we'll continue to discuss and see what other things people might want to see changed, amended, and then we'll bring this again at our next regularly scheduled meeting, at which point we will vote on it. So by placards, who is in favor amongst voting members of deferring the vote on this until our next regularly scheduled meeting? 1, 2, 8. All those opposed? Okay. So we will defer the vote on this. We will continue to discuss it, and we will have and any other things people might think might be problematic, and then we will present the amended resolution at our next meeting. Okay. So a whereas clause sort of. So currently we will implement a whereas clause that sort of says what we mean by shared governance to go along with that first resolve clause. Are there any other concerns over this resolution or things people would like to say? So are you proposing that we amend it to include that? Okay. We'll type that up. Yeah, I know that it's in pretty much every other resolution we present, so we'll include that. I'll leave it about that for now. There's a list of people that's normally included. The Dean News, Dean Hubble, President Thornton. I was figuring through President Lex Garrett in this list as well. Yeah,
that's cool. Just my research
in the
executive
session,
there's
actually some room. It says that field representative may be excluded from the session in addition to the public. Public which means it's not a requirement. Okay.
So
there's
not
that kind of question. Okay. So anything else for this resolution? Okay. So we will draft that additional whereas clause, and then we'll present this resolution at our next regular scheduled meeting, where presumably we will approve the amendment and hopefully approve this resolution without taking too much time out of our next meeting. So with that, we will then move on to our breakout session and on open course evaluations. And here we have some guests there from the student assembly who will speak to us about this.
Cool. So I'm going to describe the initiative maybe like a minute ago to shout out.
Yep. First of all, introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Joseph Fridman. I'm the undesignated at large representative in the student assembly. I'm a sophomore studying cognitive science as a college scholar in art. Yeah, really happy to be here. Really, thank you very much for the opportunity to present. Back in the fall, we presented resolution number 29 from the student assembly. It got pretty unanimous support. I think it passed something like 23-2. And it said that Cornell should implement a committee that would investigate the possibility of an open course evaluation system. Now, within the status quo, tuition is going to hit something like $100,000 in the next 10 years, and the only information that students have about any class is about 4 sentences. This isn't the same at our peer institutions, this isn't the case within Cal, this isn't the case within engineering, and it shouldn't be the case university-wide. We're currently pursuing an effort within the Arts College to make syllabi posting voluntary, and working on the background for that. But in general, we want to propose something like Yale Blue Book, for the entire university. And what that would be is four quantitative questions or summaries about every class. That would be, how far is this class? Or what was the workload compared to all the other courses that you've been in? Would you recommend me, what was your overall experience in this course? It's a Likert scale out of 5. Did you use this course for distribution requirements? And did you use this course for your major? And then there's one qualitative question, which is just scope of comments about the course. Now, there are a number of questions that have to be answered by any committee that would implement this university-wide. Do we want visiting lecturers to be evaluated? Do we want first-time teachers and graduate students to be evaluated? Do we want small classes that have sort of provision for anonymity? All very important questions. But what ended up happening is the idea was brought before the deans of all the schools. And as I was told, nobody expressed interest in implementing such a committee university-wide. I'm coming to you for support for the establishment of such a committee and for ideas about how to move further in each college. So as it stands right now, Cal already has evaluations and syllabi that are pretty extensive that go back for every semester. You can find those online if you just Google Cal's eval. Engineering has like 14 to 20 to 30 questions about each course, and that's, you know, you get like 100 core tally responses with like people answering how compared to for this course, like 2.2 on average, things like that. All that's posted, all that came out because of the results, because of the vote that their faculty sent it, and it was normalized very quickly as a process. We'd like to start that conversation university-wide.
Okay. So I think for now what we're going to do is going to have a little breakout session with breakout into small groups, similar to what we did for transparency. She discussed open course evaluations, how we think open course evaluations might be beneficial to graduate students and just to undergraduates, what might be the implications for us as teaching assistants, et cetera. So, and I guess if you want, you can just kind of bounce around between different groups as we discuss this. So we'll do the same sections we had before. So this section room here, we'll divide this section in half, left and right, and we'll have another group over here. So we'll break out for 15 minutes, and at the end we'll reconvene and sort of go over what might have been discussed. So, all right. So, not a problem. So, just a and if people in the back want to come down and join any section that we can use more than
thank you. I'm going to be a little bit of a Thank you.
For participating in that breakout session. So I know in my session we had a good discussion on the issue. So I'm going to give the floor back now to Justin.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, one of the things I'm asking for is the support from the GTSA that the working group is constructed. The working group has, so the university has under resolution tomorrow would say, there have been two members of the GTSA who investigate such questions that is like, how would graduate students that are being here for full tax course, like just being, like, how would they be like, things like that. A few other interesting points. So at Stanford, I mentioned that the teachers at Stanford, they don't have the abysmal low evaluation rate that you're probably familiar with because they have an incentive system in which students that don't fill out evaluation get their final grade, like 2.1, which, as you guys know, sucks, or if you pull them out, it's a 92% completion rate. That would be something they'd be interested in. So, I mean, it's not a key part of the proposal, but it just wraps the proposal that we increase the amount of evaluation, which is good because right now, the status quo is their targeting site, that's right now, it's out there. Cornell has their own system called TAN courses, which is both of them supposed to have students back in the 80s. That's no longer the case. We use Rick Professor. And that gets just the tail end of the bell curve, mostly of sort of enable that preferences within the course. There's some pretty good data. Also, if you look at a school that's open up course evaluation, that the proportion of professors from that school are actually even on Rick Professor at all goes down massively. I think it's like down to a third from like 80-90%. So if you guys will have the little white paper two-page thing that I put together, you should have a link to the Columbia report. That's like 62 pages they put it out 3 years ago. That covers kind of everything that's happening in the ID Plus community for the same thing.
Hello. So, just from the individual sections, if someone wants to just sort of raise any key points that they felt. So, anyone in this section?
We had a kind of humanity interest, and then had several concerns about the program. I guess the major thing for us is that we kind of use the modification of topics where, you know, you're shopping for courses, and, you know, we're thinking about, on one hand, we like the idea that we don't want to make about courses for the benefit. On the other hand, we're concerned that required courses like organic chemistry, this next section, is there any points you wanted to highlight from your discussion? Next question, anyone had anything that wasn't already raised before?
Yeah, so we were kind of talking about, but I think my department first classes were not in the car. So, like, they have to like inform the operators when they get their second shift. And the first time they go to the office, you know. So, even just like after school, like, okay, I'll go to the list, like, okay, we're going to be doing some, maybe like one presentation, and maybe in English, they look at we might talk about paper classes.
Over here? Anything that's not already been covered for?
Yeah, I guess, so, kind of greater professional students will allow us to take a set number of courses that are just paid to us by colleges and those programs. So, our main concern here is that, in our section, the GPSA has selected the topics that it addresses so that the ones that do have relevance to us don't lose weight. So we want to make sure if we do decide to go forward with this presentation, arguing for why it's relevant to our interests as well as those of our interests.
And finally, over here, anyone have anything that?
You mentioned a little bit about that there are some regions and sectors of biases and open access. And so that is a big concern of ours, especially female professors and female graduate students. You know, there's unfairness about that. So that's a big thing to consider in the structure of the actual question. And then also maybe some issues of unequal weight on tenured faculty versus untenured faculty who might be responding to concerns about difficulty more by making things easier, so it's rather more positive view versus tenured faculty who are really stressing. And then, so along with that, the design of the actual question, having more quantitative measures of difficulty, kind of sort of the individual assessment, so just hours spent on that question, so like that, so you can have some things that are used for that.
So thank you for coming, and we'll see what steps we can take next. Alright, so thank you. Alright, and with that, we will move into open forum. So is there anything for open forum? Oh, no, that was my mistake. That was typed up from last time. Yes.
Well, just to say, this is the last meeting and requested about the specifics on the reinforcement of the specific center membership, that everybody got that information now or the week that they complained.
All right. Okay. You want to? So just sort of a heads up, we've been asked to provide a recommendation for an Olin lecturer, and so we'll be sending out email to the general listserv with basically a list of previous Olin lecturers as well as sort of what the Olin lectureship is, and we'll be asking for nominations. It's essentially asking for an alumni to come back to Cornell. Yeah.
Anyone famous.
So we want to hear come and talk to us. And so, like I said, we'll be sending out a sort of list of previous OLE lecturers to try and give people ideas about what the normal speakers are. It's a fairly big deal, I'd say. I think there's a substantial honorarium that goes along with it. So keep an eye out for that. It should be going out this week, hopefully.
Like
the list of the back up. Is there There's a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. We are adjourned.